Hey, Bears fans, this is Cole Wright from Marquee Sports Network. Now, we know you can never get enough Bears, so join us Tuesday for Bear Essentials, a recap of this week's Bears action and analysis of the week ahead. Then, we'll re-air this week's Bears game at 7 o'clock on Marquee Sports Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87, ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
It's another big day in Chicago sports. We've got a few hours, about 5 hours until the NBA draft.
Do you know that Chris Black calls today his favorite day of the sports calendar?
It's always been one of mine, too.
Really?
It's when teams are shaped. This is how you build.
Am I right, Black? Did I describe that correctly? I just said to Sylvie that today is your favorite day on the sports calendar.
I love the NBA draft. I love getting ready for the NBA draft. I love trying to figure out what teams are going to do, how their different players are going to fit, what GMs are thinking. I love the whole thing.
Do you ever get tired of Abdallah's breakdown of certain players and whether or not they can make some noise if they do certain things?
No, there's going to be a lot of noise, but you got to try and figure out between the signal and the noise on a night like tonight.
You got to sift through all that stuff. Extend and make some threes.
In the past, we would usually be at the Advocate Center getting ready for the draft show tonight, and we'd be on till ? Because we're there sometimes till midnight, till 1 a.m., waiting for different GMs to speak to us and talk to us and all the different things.
You got to get the live hit with Dougie McBuckets, don't you?
Yes. Whoever the Bulls draft, and then John Paxson and Gar
Foreman. You're
talking
about the year that McDermott was picked, right? You're not talking about every year getting the hit.
No, he's just there.
He's just hanging out to celebrate. But I love the NBA draft. There's tons of speculation and lots of different options for the Bulls to go with at 4.
Chris, I don't know if you know this, but I used to still, when I lived in the city and the Bulls were still based at the Berto Center, that I was so into the NBA draft, I would drive to the northern suburbs to me at that point when I lived in the city, it felt like driving to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Anything north of North Avenue.
It is. You know that now.
I used to consider anything north of North Avenue, Wisconsin. And I would drive up to the Berto Center just to hang out with Carmen and Hoodie and I'll never forget, I was there the year that Tyrus Thomas was picked and they had the big trade. I was very pro Tyrus, believe it or not, that draft. I was there for the Joakim Noah draft. I was very excited. One of the few over Noah falling to number 9 that year. Everyone thought, oh, we got a clown. He's got the bow tie. He stinks. He can't shoot. He's terrible. And this is how you build a team.
What pick was he? Was he 9?
9. Yes, 9. And think about the NBA. Where does the NBA drama come from? If it's not on the court, it is with the way the league can wheel and deal. Is there another league that wheels and deals like the NBA?
Well, I mean, listen. I would say, I don't know if this is a new phenomenon or not. I defer to you basketball heads for that. But, they're giving away at least mid-first-round picks. They're giving them away like Tic Tacs now. Nobody wants them.
Sure, right when Gar and Pax leave the building. They couldn't even get a second-round pick. They just sell them.
But now, all of a sudden,
all these teams are getting first-round picks for everyone they're trading.
It's just like teams are like, you know what? We plan on being good for a while, so the 23rd pick of the first round is meaningless for us, so we're going to trade that right now for something else.
Think about another league, though, Waddle. Where do stars change addresses more than the NBA?
I think you're right.
LeBron
happens.
LeBron has gone from Cleveland to Miami to Cleveland to the Lakers, and he is arguably, a top 5 player in all of NBA history. Harden could go to Brooklyn. That could be his third team. Westbrook could be traded again. There's still talk about Giannis. They're trying to sweeten everything for Giannis, so he signs a supermax. Guys get dealt. Mm-hmm. And what Bleck was alluding to, there's one rumor out there right now. I believe it was the Ringer who had this initially. Wilbon had been texting us about it. There's talk of the Bulls going up to number 2. And don't forget, Golden State has the second overall pick right now.
Right.
And there's talk about the Bulls maybe trading Wendell.
Are we going to have a fight about that again? Are we going to have, like, are we going to have the Wendell Carter fight again?
Wait,
like
did we have a Wendell Carter fight?
Don't you remember the Wendell Carter fight?
Did you have a Wendell Carter fight?
This was back in the days, like, this was a couple years ago. Don't you remember?
Back in the days of what?
I was going to say when you were more of a red ass, but like that really, I was going to say that, and it wasn't that long ago. So, no, when we were talking about basketball, and I was like, yeah, Wendell's just a guy. I don't know if it's because they haven't developed him, but all of his baskets come from the paint. He's a good defender, but he's a guy. And you got mad at me, and I think you took my basketball credentials away from me. And I think at one point you got so red-assed with me, you brought up the fact that I thought Ryan Leaf was going to be a better pick than Peyton Manning.
And don't forget, you also went with
Greg Oden. Yes.
You went with Greg Oden over that's my point. Kevin Durant.
I think you unloaded both of those nuggets at me. It's when I said that, and you got mad, and I said he was just a guy, and you're like, what the hell do you know? You thought he... Greg Oden was going to be better than... I didn't even know who Kevin Durant was when he was coming out.
I thought LaMarcus Aldridge was going to be a soft bust in the NBA, and that's why I wanted Tyrus. I fell in love with him with that LSU team in the NCAA tournament, him and Big Baby going to the Final Four. Like, what do we know? Like, no, that's a thing.
I know much less than you guys know. That's why I'm coming into tonight's draft with an open mind and a very open heart as well. I want to wrap my arms around this Bulls team. I'm excited about what they're going to do. I will follow management blindly at this point for the time being. And I'm excited to see what happens.
I am calling tonight the benefit of the doubt draft.
Okay, I'm with
this
you.
This is the year that Karnishevis gets just the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if anyone can come on and say, well, I didn't like that pick. I guess you can. But, I mean, this is already a really hard draft to understand because there's no true star. What history tells us is there will be a star or two or three that comes out of this draft.
I would also like to say that I reserve the rights to absolutely get butthurt about what happens and come after this draft if 4 years from now it doesn't work out. Like, that's how we felt about Pace, right? Like, I mean, okay, we're going to give you a benefit of now, right now.
Show us, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, listen, I'm all in. I'm with you. I'm open to any and all ideas, but I reserve the right to be pissed off four years from now.
Here's how you can look at it, Sylvie. If Obi Toppin is the name at four, I think the Bulls have overdrafted that player. If Tyrese Halliburton is the name at four, I think the Bulls have overdrafted that player. So I feel like there would be fair criticism for both of those individuals at four. Now, the names that we're looking at right now, Denny Avdija, the kid from Israel who's coming over, a small forward, can't really shoot but can really do everything else for you. That's going to be a name at number four we're looking at.
Isn't that kind of a black check against you, or black mark against you, or a check mark against you, however you want to say it, if, like, you bring a guy in and he can't shoot?
Well, yes, especially in today's NBA.
I got this quarterback named Mitch. He's athletic, but he's not really accurate. He doesn't throw well.
So let me ask you this. Do you guys remember Michael Kidd-Gilchrist?
Yeah, from Charlotte. Yeah, he played at Kentucky, right?
Yes, went to Kentucky, drafted by the Hornets. Hard worker and could do everything on the court except shoot.
Yes.
He's worked on the shooting, hasn't improved. It has not. And that's why he's a journeyman.
I could give you Jimmy. Jimmy, people thought, was a defensive try-hard guy who was tough, athletic, older for the draft. And what'd he do? He got into the gym and he worked.
Hold on, but Jimmy Butler wasn't shooting 50% from the free throw line before he got to the NBA. Like, that's the problem with Avdija, is he is a terrible shooter based on percentages.
So you're not an Avdija guy?
No, I kind of am. But I'm just laying out the case for Avdija. Like, he'd be able to do everything else for you as a small forward. So then the other name that's been hot over the last 24 hours is Patrick Williams from Florida State, the small forward, who can shoot. Right? And he is someone that a lot of people have talked about. Like, if you're saying, right, we've said this yesterday, it's a three-player draft. Well, many people who say it's a three-player draft say that the player with the most upside outside of the top three is Williams from Florida State.
How old
and
is
that's
he?
That's the name.
He's
I think
the second youngest guy in the draft, okay. Waddle.
Yeah, he was a freshman at Florida State.
He's the guy that everyone said has never started a game for Florida State as well, right? Correct. I mean, I don't put too much stock in that.
Correct,
right.
But they went 26-5 last season. They were a good team. And also, his teammate, Devin Vassell, the shooting guard, is also going to likely be a top 10 pick as well for Florida State. So, like, you can make – and here's the other the other thing I would throw out there with college basketball coaches is that some of them don't know what they're doing. And so you can point to, Waddle, that this kid didn't play.
Matt Nagy just said, hold my beer.
Well, exactly. But you could point to, hey, you know what's weird? Is that Williams kid from Florida State never started, but 2 years into the NBA, he is the best rookie of this class. Like, what was that coach thinking? Like, that's something that happens all the time in the NBA and translation from college to the NBA. So he is a player that would be a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. He'd be a guy that can defend. He could play the position as a 4-5 on the defensive side.
Athletic, too.
Athletic, right. A lot of upside, right? So, like, as a Bulls fan, Sylvie, how do you look at this? Would you rather have more upside, or would you like a sure thing that you know can contribute but may not have that end potential 4 or 5 years out?
I need upside. They're saying that this Williams kid is in the mold. They're not saying he's going to be them, Waddle. But when you comp, say, you know, he is in the form of a Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George type with that sort of, you know, a guy who could play many different positions, can be long, can defend, can maybe develop later here too into
is he going to be there
upside guy?
You know, it's one of those.
A lot of some people would say that's an overdraft, but I would argue what were people saying about Donovan Mitchell? Like, Donovan Mitchell went, 13?
He did. And the last week before the draft with Mitchell, there was a lot of hype that people were saying, the talk, and I'm not just saying this now in hindsight, but do you guys remember the hot gossip in the NBA heading into that draft was that Donovan Mitchell was the best player. And for some reason, he keeps slipping. Do you guys remember this?
Yeah.
I don't.
Cap told the story today, too, Waddle, about Giannis, that Atlanta identified him as their guy, and they were 17th
from the Woj
in the draft. So Woj told the story. So it was a whole big thing about how Giannis, and remember where he went. He went, he didn't go in the top 10.
Was he 13, something like that, to Milwaukee?
And then so 17, Atlanta wanted him, and they knew he was going to be great. And then they had a chance to trade up, and they thought, quote, it costs too much.
Right.
Now what does it look like to cost too much? I mean, so, look, there are drafts where you say there's Zion and there's other guys who are destined to be stars like last year's draft. But then there are these other drafts where they hype them as not being a stud draft, but there are always studs who come out of every draft.
Oh, absolutely. And when you look at Williams, he's 6'8", but he has a wingspan of 6'11". Right? So who does that remind you of? And I know
Kawhi.
Fran Fraschilla said his name earlier today. So it's Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, that's the type of player.
They have monster hands, too.
Yeah. And so, like, you look at that and you'd say, Sylvia, you want a star. I would immediately rule out Halliburton, right? Like, what is Halliburton? He is going to be a good player for a long time.
Not a bad comp.
Right, yeah. A great guy, right? Like, all the reviews are that Halliburton killed in the meetings with these teams. Teams love this kid, and he's going to work hard, but is he going to be a star? When I watch him play, he doesn't scream star to me. That's just me.
I'd still go with it. Like, again, I know what you're saying. If they say Halliburton tonight, this is the benefit of the doubt draft as of now. Then, like Waddle said, this is a hindsight business. I mean, people go, hindsight, Sylvie, hindsight. What were they saying?
Of course.
Well, this is how we judge teams. We judge teams in hindsight who wins the championship as the teams who have the good years. We judge GMs by if they drafted well or if they didn't draft well.
It's held against me that I thought that, that I thought Ogden was going to be better than
Well, and the other names that are the high potential names, Killian Hayes, the guard who is from France. He is someone to watch in the top 10. Onyeka Okongwu, who is from USC, the big, who, did you guys see the story came out today that he has a foot injury, but it shouldn't really hamper him going into next season. So is that smoke trying to get someone off of Okongwu's signal there that a team maybe in the top five
want
him?
Don't want to be on Okongwu's signal.
Well,
yeah, I don't either. That sounds painful.
He is a player that is very intriguing that I would be surprised if teams...
Did Sam Bowie have foot problems?
Yes.
He did.
And thankfully, he went number two.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So, 312-332-3776. Look, I think there are a lot of Bulls fans like us who have been sort of quiet because the Bulls have been so bad, and now all of a sudden we're excited. And I want to give you an example of this. Like, for instance, I just put out a poll question. Who is the better future? Is it the Bulls or the Bears? And I think the results may shock you. If you want to weigh in, 312-332-3776.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
You'll want to be with us the entire show. You'll never know when you hear that breaking news sounder. We could get a Bulls trade. Maybe they trade up. Maybe they trade back. The mysterious Arturis Karnishevis is working, people. We don't know what he's going to provide. Yeah, he's working.
Okay.
We didn't know what he was going to do with Boylan. We didn't know that Billy Donovan was on the radar.
Hell yeah.
He went to work. So right now he's got the benefit of the doubt. And all things are fluid in the NBA. It's a league that loves to wheel and deal. 332-3776. Welcome to everyone in the Twitch channel. I just said hello in the chat room. It's twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Another great way, convenient way, wherever you may go to watch and listen to the show, you could react to.
Did you step into the Twitch thing and high five everyone? Is that
I always try and, yeah, a
look
couple times.
You
a show,
are like, such the man of the people. You
I
are.
Like to, I like to see what they're responding with. Look, sports is an interactive thing.
Uh-huh.
No one's got all the answers.
No.
We interact.
No.
2,100 people have voted, Waddle. Which Chicago team is the brighter future?
Well, my guess is that the majority of the people are voting the Bulls. That'd be my guess.
What if I told you that 8 months ago? Gar and Pax were still here. People are chanting in February, fire Gar Pax. And the Bears still are coming off an 8-8 season, and they got this new coaching staff. And Foles is in the fold. And he's a Super Bowl champion. While he went 27-2.
Oh, I know.
What if I asked you this? 6 weeks ago when the Bears were 5-1. I mean,
I would still have said at that point the Bears, because I would still be hoping for offensive improvements. Maybe that was still false hope even then. But now I would think that I won't think it will be crazy, but I'll go 63% say Bulls.
86.6% of the listeners are saying the Bulls have the better future than the Bears.
Wow.
I was texting with Andrew Siciliano from the Red Zone Network on Monday, because I love when these national guys who watch a ton of football get to watch our team solo, where they're focused on our team. And it's one thing to just take peeks at the Bears, but it's another thing to live our hell. You know, here's 3 hours you have to live our hell watching the offense. And I said to Siciliano, I texted, can you name me the for sure teams in the NFL who definitely have it worse going forward?
Jets.
And like, I heard them in the morning debate, like, would you rather be the Bears now drafting at 15 or the winless Jets knowing that Lawrence could be coming?
Jets suck.
That's easy. I'd rather be the Jets. Because you're likely to get a new head coach. Adam Gase is not going to be there for a long time.
Yeah, but they always mess it up.
But you would get your quarterback. And Lawrence is supposed to be one of the best prospects in
a
while.
I got it, but wasn't Sam Darnold the number one selection?
No, he wasn't.
Okay, what was
Baker
he? Three?
Was.
All right, three. I mean, like, it's not that. It's not like he was drafted in the third round. I'm just saying they screwed up that.
And that's my point that, like the Bears' offense is Jets level
stuff.
Okay,
but here's my point. I love what Joe Burrow's doing in Cincinnati. Love it. Love, 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 love it. I also like what's happening with the Chargers. And that, what was that pick?
He was six.
So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily...
215?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know...
The three teams that were ugly that drafted new quarterbacks in the Chargers, the Dolphins, and the Bengals are all now in better shape than the Bears are going forward.
Yeah, I know, but, like, listen... You don't have to have the number one overall selection as long as you're good at evaluating that position and that talent. Like, look at the Dolphins. Dolphins defense is really good. You got Tua. Now you're ready. I mean, the Bears have the defense. Get the right quarterback.
Right.
I mean, the Jets have to build everything from scratch.
So it's interesting. Vote online, and that's what I've challenged them. I mean, I'd still maybe... I'd rather be the Jets because I know I'm getting Lawrence. But, yes, they could screw it up. And there are only, the point is, in my opinion, there are only like two, three, four teams in the league right now who I believe have a worse future than our Bears because of no quarterback, no offensive line, a defense that's getting older, no real
Would you rather be the belief. Jags?
No, that's one where I can safely say, no, I wouldn't put the
Jets. Would
you
rather be the Broncos?
Probably not. Like, they're on par. They're on Bears level par.
Would you rather be Washington?
Probably not. They don't have the quarterback.
Would you rather be Detroit?
Probably not. They're right. I'll give you all those teams. Those are the teams that pretty much I wrote down,
too. There's only a handful. Like,
there's only a handful of them.
I run out of suggestions for you. I get it.
Yes. Derek in Elk Grove, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Derek?
Hey guys, it's an honor as always. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Before I get to my question for Black to throw into the calculator, I just want to say what a great job the brothers are doing at night from 6 to 8.
You guys are awesome. Ought to
cherish it because the mothership's going to snatch them up before long.
They're going to be stars.
Look at that.
They're going to be stars.
I don't think that's
going to
happen.
Is their agent?
Yeah. We get half of their salary when they go
the mail
for the first 5 years.
Let's hope. Hey, question for Black. Before I heard of the possible Golden State 2-for-4 swap, I was actually thinking about what if we offer them Levine and Carter for just the 2 and keep the 4? Is that possible? And maybe even get that Bell guy back that we just gave him with that second round pick.
That's a good question, Derek. I would imagine that if Levine and Carter are on the move, they'd be moved in different deals. Like, I don't know if the Warriors would have much use for Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're going to have Stephen Clay back. They have enough in the backcourt. And to be honest, if you're dealing both of those players, I would actually want more back than just that pick.
Yes, right.
If you're a Bulls fan, like I would want something more.
Listen, people, I know that there are differing opinions of Zach LaVine, and some don't have a tremendous amount of value for him. He's not a plus defender, obviously. There are some holes in his game, but he makes $18 million. So, like, I think he's a more desirable commodity than maybe some others do.
His arrow is still going up. He's still improving.
25, is he?
He's not 25? Expensive, right. And let's get him around now a good coach. And let's see. Like, now his value may never be higher. But I truly believe that it's not going to go down to see what you've got.
You're right. I mean, like, his three-point... His range and his shooting has improved, hasn't it? I mean, like, he's gotten himself in the gym. And
yeah, it's improved. And you're right. The value for Zach LaVine is actually really good. I think it's just management of expectations with him, right?
Yeah.
People talk about him like he's a star. He's never been an all-star. Right? Like,
right.
People talk about him like he's a star. He's never led a team to the playoffs. That's what stars do in the league. So, like, if you have the correct expectations for him, and maybe if he isn't the number one on a team, maybe he's a really solid number two.
I'd like to see him without Jimbo.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, just say, like, I have reasonable expectations.
Yeah.
I don't have these wild expectations.
Fred Hoiberg?
Have him do less.
Fred Hoiberg,
too.
No good?
No, no good.
Okay.
Boylan, no good.
It wasn't only Boylan. I'm just saying.
Right, I know that.
I know. I mean, like...
Yeah, they were parking in Freddie's spot, and he just said, okay.
His teams in Minnesota weren't winning either.
We'll park somewhere else. It's fine. Gregory on the south side, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Gregory.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I got a couple of – first of all, I want to answer your question. Your question was, who do you think is better to be more successful? But my question here is are you speaking of who will make it to a championship or sustain some – some level of success.
Yeah, who has the better future? I'm not asking who wins the next championship. It's whose future is brighter right now, the next year to 3 years, 4 years, whatever you may think of, who's got the better, brighter future?
It's got to be the Bulls because they've blown everything up and they're starting over. At least they're at ground level. The Bears don't even can't figure out what they're doing. So they're in a mess. So I don't see how they climb their way out of that right now, seeing that they don't have an offensive line. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a coach. They don't have a front office. You figure that out.
I think that situation could get significantly better, shorter than probably most people believe right now.
The Bears?
Yes.
Well, you figure out quarterback and everything changes.
Yeah, I do. Well, I just think there are going to be other opportunities to, if you, again, it comes down to acquiring, identifying and acquiring the right people. If you can do that, then, you know, the path is made a little bit easier.
But like we said, the cap is going down. Their best right. offensive player on a bad offense may not even be back next year. Think about that. There's a team that Dan Weider wrote today in the Tribune hasn't scored a touchdown offensively on Monday Night Football. They were on two Monday Night Football games, and they did not score a touchdown.
Is there any chance they get flexed out of, or is it because it's Bears and Packers, you can't flex that?
I think it's already within the two-week window.
Okay.
We're less than 2 weeks away, so I don't think it can get flexed.
But there's hope.
Is there hope that they can get flexed?
I don't. I mean, do you want to be the marquee game again?
Yes.
Or do you want to just be pushed?
I want
the nation to feel yes. our pain.
Not just that, but listen, what you are looking for is an impetus for change.
Yes.
And where is the appetite currently for change? Look, we're not either get better on national television or have all of your warts exposed on national television. Do one of the two.
I've gotten a disgusted Troy Aikman a couple of times.
Yeah.
I've gotten a disgusted Brian Griese and Louis Riddick. Now I'm going to get a disgusted Chris Collinsworth with the offense. That's good.
Wouldn't you rather lose, if you're going to lose, and you're going to be embarrassing on offense again, wouldn't you rather lose on a national stage than obscurity at a 12 o'clock game?
Yeah, I don't want to. Who cares what Dick Stockton thinks?
We are looking for an impetus. If you are going to lose,
yes,
you're looking for an impetus to change.
And I want every former NFL player to be tweeting about how bad the Bears' offense is. On Monday Night Football, like I just said, zero touchdowns from the offense. The defense on Monday Night Football this year scored a touchdown. The special teams has scored a touchdown this year on Monday Night Football. There's zero in two games from our offense. I want former players being disgusted with what they see.
Or I want to see them make this miraculous improvement on national television. One or the two.
Keep hoping.
I'm not holding my breath. I'm just saying I would rather see this game unfold on national television than in an obscurity on a Sunday at noon.
Answer Waddle's question, 312-332-3776. If you want to talk Bulls draft with us, be our guest. Why was Theo Epstein so upset in Game 7 of the World Series against the Indians? You'll hear that answer from Theo coming up next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Phone number to reach us is 312-332-3776. Theo Epstein was on with Cap and Hoodie today. 30 minutes they spoke to him for.
Can I say this real quick, too? You're the Cub fan. There are a ton of Cub fans out there that feel very strongly about what Theo helped accomplish and are probably sad that he is leaving. As someone who's not a Cub fan, can I just tell you how much I've appreciated how he has, like, handled himself and been willing to have conversations and treat everyone with respect and dignity? And just he acts like a regular guy. And in an environment in the world of sports where you get very little access to people in his position, whether it's Ryan Pace meeting the media maybe once a year, unless it's on the flagship, or other scenarios, I just have appreciated his willingness to actually have a good, solid, you know, conversation. And maybe that's setting the bar really low. But in this day and age, you don't always get that from people. So it's been a joy to have the moments that we've had with him in this business that we're involved in on the radio.
And also a guy that would come on during their highest of highs after the World Series, and he would join us, whether it was from the Cubs convention, to talk about the controversy with Addison Russell.
Yes.
He would join us and show up in person at spring training when they weren't at their highest. He would show up at Dutch and Docks. Do you remember both him and Jed showed up at Dutch and Docks after they lost a heartbreaker, game one of a doubleheader against the Dodgers? And it didn't matter. And he would be accountable, and he'd make you feel better about your team, too, even if things were hitting the fan.
Yep.
So
I always appreciated that. And Jed's the same way.
Yeah.
And listen, I mean, I don't want to exclude the Rick Hahn and the White Sox. Rick is very accessible as well. But you know what? I just always enjoyed our conversations with Theo. And again, I wish we, and maybe Ryan Pace doesn't want to talk to us because we've been difficult on him or hard
but
on
we
him.
But we were difficult on Theo,
well,
too.
We were, you're mean, right. No, I'm just joking. But like it's refreshing to have that kind of access. And it's not every day. But we did have tremendous access to him, and I just thought it was cool. And he deserves a lot of credit for a lot of things that he's done.
Absolutely. So Theo was on with Cap today. I thought this was interesting. This isn't the most newsworthy piece of the interview, and I'll play you some of that, like him taking the blame for them underperforming. But I thought, Waddle, you'd get a kick out of this because you remember my reaction to you when Rajay Davis at the home run in game
you
seven.
Gave me a double bird.
You know how emotional of a moment that was for me.
Yeah.
And like we were arguing before the game, you're like, hey, you're going to be able to get to their pen. And I'm like, yeah, but Chapman's really tired. And so here's Chapman facing Davis. Mm-hmm. And Theo talked about him sitting in the crowd with Jed and how pissed he was at David Ross, who was doing the catching. Listen to this.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I was pretty wrapped up in that at bat, in the dynamics of that at bat, because I felt like he was just out. If he spun any slider, he's out. Or even, you know, he also had a changeup. He was just so geared up for fastball and was cheating so bad to get to it. Jed was a few seats over, and we were kind of looking at each other out of the corner of our eye and motioning, you know, doing the little slider motion, be like, let's just get this. Just throw something other than the heater, get this at bat over with. So and that bat went on so long that by the end of it, even before he hit the homer, we were kind of like seething, and that's common. Like you just that's how you watch games, right? Is second guessing everything, and then when he hit the homer, it was like just couldn't believe it. And yeah, of course, there's an element of here we go again, and. You know, I didn't think curse, but I just think like, God, this cannot be happening to us. Like, why does it have to be so difficult? And, you know, and the place is going crazy. And so at that point, you know, it's hard to on the road to blow a big lead in a game that you've been winning the whole time and come back and win. So I felt pretty pessimistic until I saw what I saw during the rain delay, and that kind of changed everything.
Thought that was a cool story. Yeah, to hear them sitting like fans, second guessing their catcher, who's now their manager. By the way,
you know, I tell anyone who will ever listen, you know, I've had the distinct honor and privilege of playing in some pretty cool spots. I don't think I've ever been in a sports environment that was that dramatic. That game seven and what transpired late in that game, like it was crazy. It's the most drama filled. Exciting sports moment, I think, that you could have ever asked for.
And because it followed the script of the Cubs curse for the first, what, eight innings, nine innings?
Right.
Where the Cubs took the big lead, you're counting down the outs, and then all of a sudden there's no way that this little guy, Rajay Davis, hits Chapman, and he hits the home run, and you're just waiting for it to end badly. And then there's the flip of the script and the way that thing ended. And it was hard to the end, too, because remember, the Indians scored a run in that 10th inning.
Yeah.
Here's Theo talking about underperforming, and like Hoodie asked him the question about if he's been very critical of the bats not performing, and he's put the focus on himself, and that's why I always thought Theo was very accountable when he would show up and do interviews.
I mean, look, it's not fair for me to sit here and say, oh, I'm frustrated at their performance. I mean, I'm accountable for that. So just frustration with myself as well. We did underperform. You know, if you sit there and look on paper, you know, right now, you know, this group still projects to be, you know, a solid offense, and we should be, but we can't necessarily rely on that because it hasn't proven out that way. And, you know, with the players that we have and with the progression in their career and all of them moving into their primes, we always thought, you know, by the time we got to this stage where they're in their primes, just based on the talent and based on what they'd already done the first couple of years of their career, that we'd have, you know, a powerhouse group of position players and that we'd be scrambling to figure out the pitching year to year. Which is something that we've actually been able to do. We've had the second best pitching in baseball since 2015. But the group of position players, it never all came together at the same time. And I take responsibility for that, but yeah, having to go out and supplement the offense with a significant move each year was not something I anticipated having to do. You know, the deals for the Daniel Murphys and Nick Castellanos of the world. And then the struggles down the stretch, despite that, that's something we didn't anticipate. And but we have to, you know, obviously have to learn from it going forward. But if you told me that, all these players that have maybe struggled down the stretch and are the source of a lot of frustration, I know, for our fans, because it hasn't come together, that they, from this point forward, whether it's here or somewhere else, absolutely go off and reach their potential and play in a lot of All-Star games and win MVPs and Silver Sluggers across the diamond, like it would not surprise me in the least, because they are that talented.
And I like that, because he didn't make excuses. Well, it's baseball. It's really tough to stay consistent and to be great. He is telling you that they thought they were going to be the Dodgers, that they had Seager and they had Bellinger.
That's why they were so reluctant to make any moves, to move away from any of them.
Right, and that they would be dominating and be great hitters year in and year out. And it's just,
it has been quite, I mean, to me, it has been quite confounding, if that's the correct word. Surprising, obviously disappointing. I did not expect the collective collapse from their bats in crunch time over the last several years.
Not at all, no. And then Theo actually admits that he created a problem for baseball nationally, and now we may want to fix it. I want to play you that coming up from Theo Epstein next.
Save money and energy like a boss. Find ideas and incentives for your facility from the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program at comed.com/likeaboss.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
A lot going on today. Want to play one more Theo answer. And I think this is something that we've had a debate on with baseball in general and analytics. And I am the last person to be anti-analytics. But I've discussed that maybe a team zigs while the others zag. That maybe another team will value contact more. That they will say the strikeouts are killing us. It's just too much. And I'm not saying to go away from run production or any of that, but just do things differently. And I like, this is good for me to hear when Theo, who was on the forefront of all of this with Bill James and the analytical breakthrough of baseball and the way all the front offices now are very, very similar. They have similar minds. And it's created a game that can be boring at times. Theo has mentioned to us where there could be, I think, 3 minutes and 40 seconds is like the average amount of time between the ball putting in play. Think about that. And Theo said it's something that he may want to help baseball going forward, because after all, it's a problem that he created. Listen to this.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's no doubt, you know, that a lot of the work that's been done by people, you know, in my position to try to optimize individual performance and team performance has had a pretty big negative impact on the entertainment value of the game and on the aesthetic value of the game. There's not too many people who go to the ballpark and say, hey, I don't want to see the ball in play. Like, I'm here for the strikeouts and walks. It's just, sure, like, strikeouts are great. And, you know, you remember watching Roger Clemens' 20 strikeout game, and everyone here saw Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game. Like, that's great, but you don't want it to be such a fundamental part of the game that, you know, 25% of plate appearances, which is a threshold we're pushing towards in baseball, and in a strikeout. So I think the biggest thing is to get more action back in the game. You have to get the strikeout rate under control, and you can do that through a combination of making things a little bit harder on pitchers and changing hitters' incentives away from all or nothing power strikeout approaches and towards the ball in play. So in baseball, ultimately it will control, like, a lot of the variables that you can adjust to make a little bit of difference in the style and play. And by that, I mean the playing rules, the dimensions of the playing field, the equipment, the strike zone, the properties of the ball itself. And so I think, you know, they're hard at work on this, and I'm really optimistic that there's going to be some change. I think there's broad consensus that the trends in the game are troubling, and that if we can get the ball in play more, put the game back into the players' hands a little bit less, you know, the gameplay itself less dictated by the front office, the whole organization, more by the players and what's going on in the dugout, bring athleticism back, and to encourage athleticism and change incentives for general managers to value athletic players more. You want to encourage ball in play, rules that promote the ball in play. You want to encourage rules that promote base running and you know, outfield defense, things along those lines. And you can legislate towards all those things slowly and gradually over time without doing it in such a dramatic fashion that it, you know, is an interruption to the game or a distraction or changes the game that we all love so much.
I'd like to hear some specifics. Like, yeah. in essence,
a good conversation, like, in baseball season,
yeah,
isn't
like
it?
What rules? Like, what rules are you willing to change?
Well, maybe you lower the mound even more. You close the strike zone more. Like, those are the things where he talked about the pitchers, where make it harder on pitchers, where the strikeout, you know, and those are a few of them. I don't know if they would do anything with shifts or, you know, with the putting. I know you're against that. But what, yeah, I like about the general thing that he says, there are a lot of young guys, a lot of baseball bloggers who I know they love analytics. They have followed the trends. They love, and I love analytics too. But I love hearing from one of the creators of the analytics that we screwed up the game. That while it may be the way to win, that it's not necessarily what's best for baseball. And here's the guy that created all this, and he's saying to you, we created a monster. And it's not good for the game. And it took too many good things out of it for the game. Do you know what I mean? It's like you've always said, it should be a tool. Yes, use it as the tool. But the game should not come down to strikeout, walk, home run. That's not the way the game's supposed to
be.
Yeah,
that's why I've always said to you, I like analytics, but I don't love them. I'm not in a love affair with analytics. I think they're important, but I don't think that they're everything. I'm just like, listen, I would be interested to hear in what, just how drastic he would like to change the game to try to improve this situation. Like, I mean, I've heard talk also you move the mound back.
Like, right. I'd like 6 inches or something like that.
Whatever it is. I mean, but moving the mound back, like, wasn't back in the days, years and years ago, the mountain was flatter, right? I mean, it's...
No, it was higher.
Or was it higher?
Yeah,
okay,
Bob Gibson, yeah. It was another reason. And they lowered
maybe,
the mound.
Okay,
and
well,
they can lower the mound because when the pitcher is higher, he's got the advantage.
Well, maybe... I don't know what he'd be willing to change and what would be considered too big of a change. But that's a good long conversation I'd like to be sitting in on.
It's just, I like that it's not an old... Like, too often if you say... I don't like the way the NBA is just a three-pointer or dunk.
Right.
There's no real middle game. There's no anything else that you're considered an old guy. Or if you say, well, I'm tired of baseball just being strikeout, walk, and home run, you're considered an old guy. Here's the guy who was on the forefront, who changed the game,
mm-hmm.
who thrived on all of this, who's telling you we went too far, that it's not helping the game. The sport isn't as much fun to watch. It doesn't translate. So I
mean, he talked about the ball itself as well. I mean, what more are you going to do to the ball? I just think it's a really, that's a conversation I'd like to be, you know, sitting in on.
Like maybe they felt like it's too easy to hit a home run with the way the ball is put. And if you hit the ball hard and it's just a 340-foot flyout now,
right,
that maybe it will incentivize
put the ball
more line drives. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody with the launch angle now, and there's just nothing. There's no art of hitting anymore. It's hit it as high and as far as you can.
Right.
And so
it's kind of boring.
Yeah. Good stuff from Theo today. Going to be great stuff from Jeff Goodman coming on. Jeff Goodman used to work at ESPN. He's with Stadium now, The Athletic. And he knows as much about these prospects who are available tonight for the Bulls. What is he hearing about who the Bulls could be interested at 4? Does he think he could go up to 2? You'll hear from Jeff Goodman in 2 short minutes.